And after Wisconsin Public Radio News, this is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. It's 5:06. Spring is heating up. Yeah, kind of. Getting March weather in April. Today, our program is jammed. We're packed tighter than a garage band's van. We're going to hear about the Silver Dome Ballroom just west of Neillsville, one of the few that remain. Big doings tomorrow there. There's a poetry slam around the corner at UW-Barron County. We'll hear about it. Jim Oliver talks a bit of Shakespeare playing in River Falls. The Stilson Singers are hitting the stage again. UWEC cellist Tulio Rondon will join us for a chat. And to kick off today's show, Dr. Peter Haberman has been a regular and respected guest of ours here. And we had better relish each opportunity to see and talk with him since he's announced that he's moving, effective next academic year. First Favre, now Haberman. He's moving to Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota. He is, however, fulfilling his duties as music director of the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony by holding auditions for next year. And he'll be working at the Chippewa Valley Symphony Youth Music Camp this summer. So, all is not yet said and not yet done.
It's not a black and white choice for us. We love it here. Yeah. We love the Youth Symphony. Makes it harder to move because I love the Youth Symphony.
Lame duck.
The lame duck. Yeah, that's
lame,
true.
Lame conductor.
I've never been called the lame conductor to my face. I mean, I've been called many things.
Well, Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony auditions are coming up 24th, 6th, and 8th, Haas Fine Arts Center. The Youth Symphony is for grades 7 through 12.
That's right. So this year is 6th graders through 11th graders.
Okay. And, you know, it's not a coincidence that almost to the man or woman, when you hear someone who's an accomplished musician interviewed, they at one time had a youth symphony experience.
These experiences really bring out those that find music exciting. You know, talented, yes or no, hardworking, definitely, and somebody that commits at a level that they like it so much at school that they want to do more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an enrichment opportunity, if you will.
You know, I think some people, maybe even me included, have the mistaken opinion that these kinds of groups are made up of semi-prodigies, but it's actually a really nice training ground. I mean, you've probably seen people come in at a certain level and leave at a completely different level.
Absolutely. And, you know, they like music. They're interested in it. They like to play their instrument. They join this group. They realize they can play music at a new level when they're surrounded by other people that care as much as they do about music. And then that propels them to practice more, be more excited, and get more interested, which always pulls them farther down the musical journey path.
Mm-hmm.
And these aren't all people that are going to be music majors. I mean, this is not people that are going to be professional musicians. They're just people that love music and like to play with people that are also excited about doing that.
It's time as a coach to give a pep talk to kids who might be considering it but haven't taken themselves over the edge yet.
Sure. If you like playing your instrument and you want to do that with other students that are all as excited about as you are in the traditional symphonic full orchestra setting, this is the group for you. It's an auditioned group. That being said, the auditions are not scary. I'm not scary. I'm a little awkward, but I'm not scary.
No. He's sitting here right now, folks, and no, he's not scary.
And it's quite simple. It's done at this time of the year so we can plan the music for next year after we hear auditions, but it's also convenient for those of you that are already playing solos for the State Solo Ensemble Contest in early May to just play that piece for us. You get to choose your own solo as the audition piece. You get to choose your own scale, but we do ask that you play a scale for 2 or 3 octaves depending on the instrument. But you get to choose it, and knowing that ahead of time, you can make it the one you love. And then we do a really small sight reading, 8 measures in 4/4 time. It's very simple, but just to get your ideas on key signatures and accidentals and rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Sneaking suspicion that maybe there are a couple P's involved in how you watch these students audition. Performance being one, but potential being the other.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the way they come prepared on the solo that they love, and you can hear everything the students do beyond the notes, the shaping of phrases, all just the way they handle themselves, intonation, all that other stuff. Performance is part of that, but potential, hearing that 7th or 8th grader that is way beyond where they should be as a 7th or 8th grader. They may not come in as the strongest candidate, but they show that potential. So, maybe we take an extra trumpet this year. Maybe we take an extra flute player this year because this person's going to be great and this is the right group for them.
Mm-hmm. Quick promo about music camp.
June 11th through the 14th, the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra is providing a music camp experience. You can go to their website or the Youth Symphony's website, check out more information. Scholarships available, 3.5-day camp. It's an overnight camp at Beaver Creek Reserve. Also a full orchestra thing. Molly Nordine is going to be working with strings. Susan Halderman is going to be working with strings. We're looking at bringing in one of the band directors in the area to work with the winds. I get to work with me. Last year we did great things. We burned a cello. Oh. At the campfire, it was quite exciting. Bill Eisenberg.
You going bigger this year? Maybe a bass?
Maybe a bass. Maybe two violas. Who knows?
Ooh. Wow.
But it's a lot of fun, and we play music.
That sounds fun. The website is cvyouthsymphony.org. And all our best to a very good guy and valued mentor during his time in Eau Claire, Peter Haberman. Spectrum West at 5:12. Here's a reminder, Monday it's the UWEC Jazz Ensemble 1 Spring Concert, 7:30 p.m. in the renovated Schofield Auditorium. Featured guests include Nobu Yasuda on violin, Mitra Sadapur will sing, and Dr. Doug O'Connor plays the sax. It's the Midwest premiere of Duke Ellington's Black, Brown, and Beige. Wow, that's exciting. Well, hey, you know, last year about this time, we got wind of a choral concert by a new group known as the Stilson Singers. Stilson, of course, is an elementary school in the Chippewa Falls system, and Jennifer Keel is an employee. She teaches music. The idea of a designated group of singers came to life, and she's now directing 3rd through 5th graders through preparations for their annual spring concert, which is coming on April 30th. I'll bet that after last year's performance, and by the way, I was there, and the crowd it drew, that the Stilson Singers are becoming a group to aspire to.
Well, I hope so.
I mean, the younger kids have to be looking forward to getting into third grade.
Third grade.
So, how's it going? I mean, is this just the second, or do you have this every year? How long has it been going on?
Yep, this is just our second full year of doing the Stilson Singers. Last year, we did a kind of a shorter time period. I just did 8 weeks. In the fall, we did a Christmas concert at the Heidi Center and then another like 8-week session in the spring. So we kind of took a break in the middle and did our concert in the spring. This year, I did it all year long. So it was September all the way through April. So if you signed up, you were signing up for the whole year so that we could really build on skills and technique and not take that break and feel like we're starting over with a whole new group.
Ah. So you've been working on it so long. What are you doing? Something by Mahler?
No. No, but we did, kind of exciting, we did get a grant from the Community Foundation in December, and they came and presented a check to the Stilson Singers for $250. So we used that to purchase some great music by some composers and arrangers that actually I knew from some of my graduate work. And so, yeah, we're really excited to have the new music and to put this concert on.
I'll bet. Last year you had the large singing group, of course, plus some students walked up to the podium with introductions and things. Is the same format this year?
Same format, yep. And we have a little surprise. I actually have a 5th grader who has written some music, and she is going to be performing one of her own pieces. So I thought that would be a nice place for her to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's time to entice us with what's on the program for the concert on the 30th.
Well, we're calling it What a Beautiful Day, which is named after a song by Jerry Way that actually we did last year, and I don't know if you remember, but it was a terrible stormy day.
I do.
And when we got to the concert, we started singing, and the sun came out, and so I thought, let's start with What a Beautiful Day again. And then the rest of the program is we have some songs about animals, nature. We have a piece called O Colored Earth that we actually performed at the high school. In December, we were invited to sing at the Chi High Choir concert,
Cool. And
it was a real hit there, so we're going to do that piece again. You know, April is Earth Day time, so we have a piece called This Pretty Planet and some neat pieces by an arranger by the name of Cindy Giebler. We're actually doing 3 of her pieces, and she's just a really wonderful writer for kids' voices. And neat. So a couple of folk songs arranged by her.
Stilson Singers made up of third through fifth graders. What happens to sixth graders after they've had that taste of fame?
They go on to middle school, and a lot of these kids are, well, they all get to choose at middle school choir, band, or orchestra for a performing ensemble. And I will say I have more kids this year than ever that are actually selecting choir. A lot of them, though, really want to try that instrument for the first time in band. And I do encourage those that are really interested to do an ensemble, either band or orchestra, and choir as well.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, as far as the community, I've given thought to that. Is that something that I want to possibly do, a community choir, to have some of those kids that are older able to be part of it? But just sticking with the Stilson Singers for right now.
Well, once they have the taste of it, you know, it becomes part of you. I mean, there's something about being in a musical aggregation that grows on you.
Definitely. They have wonderful performing opportunities at the Chippewa Falls Middle School. I have 100% kids going into a performing ensemble.
Well, Jennifer Keel, congratulations for being a teacher who cares enough to give kids the kinds of experience that not only strengthens their mettle, but provides parents with photographs and memories that won't go away. So way to go.
All right. Thank you.
Again, it's at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. It's Monday, April 30th, 5:30 p.m. That's a little early, but of course the kids do have homework after all. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. It's 18 after 5.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering online and phone loan applications for student loans, consolidation, vehicles, a line of credit, and more. Information online at wisconsincu.org.
Here's another Spectrum memo for you tonight. The Flambeau Valley Arts Association presents fiddler Randy Sabine with the Rhythm and Bows Review, 7:30, at Ladysmith High School. Sunday evening, it's the Four Voices String Quartet at the Falcon's Nest University Center, UW River Falls. It's at 7:30 p.m., and it's a free Earth Day concert. The Eau Claire Children's Theater presents the four winning plays of the 2012 Playwrights Competition. It happens Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock. You can get info at ecct.org. To be or not to be. That is the extent of my Shakespearean appreciation. I've tried to wade through A Midsummer Night's Dream, The Taming of the Shrew, and Much Ado About Nothing years ago. But lately, my life has been Shakespeareless. All the more reason I should head to River Falls. Here's this week's feature from Jim Oliver.
Richard III, a play by William Shakespeare, based somewhat on King Richard, who ruled England from 1483 to 1485, opened Thursday at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. The director, Sean Dooley, professor of theater at the university, joins us to talk about Shakespeare's tale about King Richard. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, for those non-Shakespeare buffs in the audience, tell us what Richard III is about.
Quite simply, Richard III is about politics. At the time when Shakespeare wrote it, it was about politics, about the particular politics that he was living through in his career at that point. But he veiled that conversation in a play that went back in history to King Richard. He used the story of King Richard, which further generations of scholars have looked back on and said, I'm not sure he had a hump. I'm not sure that he was quite as deformed and evil as history makes him out to be. But Shakespeare used that character to talk a little bit about power and politics and what drives people. And so we chose that play here at the University of Wisconsin River Falls because we wanted to have a discussion about politics. There's a lot of state politics going on with the recall election. There's a lot of national politics going on with the run for the Republican nomination for president, and then obviously our national election coming up shortly. So it was a great forum for us to have a conversation about politics.
Now, it's being done in modern dress, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Years ago, I saw, I believe it was a production of Othello at the Guthrie in Minneapolis, and it was done in modern dress and set in the American South. And I admit to lots of, a great lack of sophistication when it comes to things theatrical, but I had a real hard time getting into that. And so
sure.
What do you do for adults like me who just can't get it?
Well, I think one of the things about putting it in modern dress, I think, is for many people, there's a hope that that will make it a little bit more accessible, that the characters, while they may not sound like you and I and speak in the way that we speak every day, at least they'll look like us. So in this case, our Richard is in a suit and tie. The lords and ladies are in dress apparel. Visually, it will look like people who are, you know, young professionals. The language itself is always a bit of a struggle, and we have edited this play down. It is the second longest Shakespeare play in the canon, only behind Hamlet. There are, as scripted, 54 speaking parts. We don't have 54 students in the cast. There's a lot of doubling going on, but I've also cut it down. We're running at about 2.5 hours for the whole show. So we take out as much of the repetition, anything that is obtuse and difficult, and we try to really mine the linear narrative in a way that hopefully is a little bit clearer. Then the other thing is that hopefully as a director, what I've done is I have physically staged the production in such a way that the story is clear. One thing I like to say is that I don't understand what people say to me today on a daily basis. I get confused. I don't understand everything that someone says to me, so I don't know why I would expect that I should understand everything that someone says in a Shakespeare play. That's not important. What's important is that you can, and hopefully you will, get the gist of what's going on. You go, oh, okay, that's what that was about. And then in the end, you were able to understand the story. Maybe not each moment by moment, but like I said, I think that's true of everyday life.
Just out of curiosity, how do you pull off the Battle of Bosworth Field and the famous line, a horse, my kingdom for a horse, in modern dress?
That is an excellent question and probably the crux of the entire production, because in the conversations about that, we had to figure that out or we couldn't do this. What we have done is they are set up, Richmond is set up in one camp and Richard is set up in another camp, and they are in their respective offices behind their respective desks. They fall asleep at their desks. They're visited by the ghosts of the people that Richard has killed in their offices. And then the battle happens on the assembly floor. So it is a battle of words and actions in a political forum. We're doing it very stylized. We're using a strobe light and some interesting lighting effects for when Richard actually dies. But you will not actually, there's no swords, there's no hand-to-hand combat. How Richard dies will be a little bit left to the imagination of the audience. But he does, we have kept in the line about a horse, a kingdom for a horse. It's a bit of a non sequitur, but I think in the midst of the chaos, it actually kind of works.
He is Sean Dooley, professor of theater at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls and director of William Shakespeare's play Richard III. Around here, we're pretty proud of the theater department at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, uh-huh. And you are a graduate of it.
I am.
And you earned your MFA in acting from the University of Minnesota. Do you want to talk about your career as a professional actor at the Guthrie and elsewhere?
Yeah, sure. I graduated from Wisconsin-Eau Claire. I had a really terrific collegiate experience there, but I knew I wanted to teach at that point, so I did go on and get my master's in acting from the University of Minnesota. And since that time, I have worked as a professional actor, mostly in the Midwest, most often with the Guthrie Theater. Since about 2000, I've been a part of 14 or 15 productions, including two Midwestern tours and one national tour. I did tour the country with Othello. I enjoy working there. It's a great place to work. You get to work with some really terrific professionals, and you get to do some really fun shows. And that has, hopefully, one of my goals here at River Falls is to, we are geographically quite close to the cities, and my hope is to use some of those connections to give our students a really exciting collegiate experience with working with some professionals who come in and work with them.
Talk a little bit about the value of college students performing or working on a Shakespeare play.
Sure. One of the things about any classroom is that you have a very limited amount of time. I'm sure the students don't feel that way. But as a professor, you feel like you've got very small amount of time to impart the information you want to impart. And working on a play in the evening allows us more time to go into depth about certain concepts and ideas. I often relate it to the labs and the sciences. In a science class, you would have a 2 or 3, 4 hour lab that you would do each week where you'd take those concepts and then you actually do hands-on work trying to apply those concepts. And that's what working on a play is for me. It's a lab. It's an opportunity to take those ideas and concepts from the classroom and expand upon them in a way that goes into much more depth, much more practical hands-on. We spend, 4 or 5 hours a day, 5, 6 days a week in the theater working on a play to try to get it ready. And, of course, I would love more time than the time we have, but the students really put their heart and souls into it. And so I encourage everybody to come and see it because, if nothing else, they'll watch some students who've worked really hard to create something that I think is really quite good.
Now, you've directed a number of Shakespeare plays at the college level. So what is the appeal of directing Shakespeare?
Well, in some ways, I want to give our students the opportunity to fail spectacularly, which sounds maybe a bit counterintuitive. But the point is to learn. And if we didn't take risks and try to make leaps of faith, we would just succeed on a very small scale doing the same thing over and over again. So Shakespeare is challenging. The language is challenging. The issues that are going on are quite complex and challenging. So I want our students to push themselves in directions that they have maybe not gone before. And Shakespeare, and not just Shakespeare, but some great playwrights like Chekhov or Shaw, Ibsen, in this doing O'Neill or Miller or Williams in the American canon, that really gives our students something to work on. And ultimately what they learn is a lot about themselves. And again, I think that it's all about learning. That's what this is all about. So if we take great risks and we fail spectacularly, we get up and brush ourselves off and we're a little bit better person than we were when we started.
This is probably an unfair question, but I'm going to shift gears on you a little bit from college theater to community theater.
Sure.
Shakespeare seems to be lacking in the theatrical experience in most community theaters, and I don't know, I have my theories. I don't know if they're valid or not. It seems like it might be just difficult to get directors to take a whack at doing a Shakespeare production. Do you have any advice for community theaters who might want to not only challenge their actors but also challenge their audiences to appreciate the beauty of Shakespeare's work?
That's a very good question and a very difficult problem, I think. I think one of the things that any theater company, regardless of whether it's community theater, semi-professional, and professional theater, is that there are certain expectations from an audience, and you probably set those fairly early on in your lifespan as an entity. You know, audiences begin to expect a certain thing from your theater company, and if Shakespeare or classical theater is not something that you build an audience for from the beginning, then you've got an even larger battle. Having said that, I think it is something that you can do. One of the things that people often do is update Shakespeare, do it in a different period, a different time and place, and so that maybe it isn't quite as off-putting to people. The other thing, it might require a director who is willing to and who can make cuts in a way that keep the evening short. Shakespeare's plays are long. There's a lot of repetition, and it had a point. Historically, when Shakespeare was doing his plays in Elizabethan times and it was outdoors, the atmosphere, the audience atmosphere was totally, it was more like a baseball game. It was much different than it is today. And so he had to repeat things 3 times because you didn't hear it the first 2 times. So a lot of that stuff can be cut and taken out and streamlined, and so the play itself can be more in keeping with what a contemporary audience expects from theater. And then the last thing is, I think it takes someone imparting some joy into the experience. I have talked to my actors, you know, the long hours, and they work really hard, but we had a conversation about how this should be fun. Doing plays should be fun. Putting on a play should be fun. In the midst of all the hard work, we want to see people enjoying themselves. If the actors on stage are enjoying themselves, odds are I may then enjoy watching them do it, whether it's Shakespeare or something else.
Well, we've been talking with Sean Dooley, professor of theater at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls and director of William Shakespeare's Richard III. The play opened Thursday and will continue tonight and Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday at the Blanche Davis Theater in the Kleinpell Fine Arts Building on the university campus. The good news is admission is free, but seats are reserved, so tickets are required. Tickets are available at the box office in the Fine Arts Building. Call the box office at 715-425-3114. Sean Dooley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And he, of course, is the inimitable Jim Oliver. Rolling up towards 5:33 p.m. on a Friday, the 20th day of April. This is Spectrum West. Spectrum Memoranda. UW Stout students have created a display called Double Feature, Drive-In, Good Times, Bad Films. It opens tonight at the Rosbach Heritage Museum in Wakanda Park in Menominee. The Northern Lakes Center for the Arts has readers' theater presentations called Drum Taps tomorrow and Sunday evenings in commemoration of the Civil War sesquicentennial, 7:30 both evenings. At the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls, tomorrow evening is the Savoring the Arts fundraiser. On Sunday, it's the Conrad Johns Band at 2 p.m. Next Friday, the Cody Clausen Trio performs two shows. And next Sunday, the 29th, it's Bubble Mania. We hope to have the bubble guy on next week's show. How much fun is that? You know, with all these memoranda, you can tell how many things there are to do and things to see and places to go in West Wisconsin. It's why we love doing this show. Here's another interesting sidelight. Construction on the Silver Dome Ballroom began in 1929. It was completed in 1933 when it opened for business right there on Highway 10 just west of Neillsville. It's always intrigued me when I drive by, and when I received a release about a big show there tomorrow, I decided this was a great opportunity to satisfy some curiosities I've had for years. So I found out the current owner's name is Doug Myron, and I placed a call to his office. How does a public defender in Minneapolis become involved in the ownership and preservation of such a historic landmark? Which, by the way, is a good distance to the east of where you're sitting. Even if it's a long story, go ahead, because we have time.
Well, it's not that long a story. I really have to thank the Green Bay Packers for my discovery of the Silver Dome. I live in Minneapolis, but I grew up in Wisconsin, born in Janesville, raised in Somerset, and I happened upon it driving back and forth from here to Packer games along Highway 10 several times a year.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion, on more than one occasion, but on this particular occasion, I stopped for a closer look, and I happened upon the owner inside, who then told me about the history of the place, and we visited for quite a little while. And he asked what I did, and I described to him a lot of the music-related stuff I was involved in, because I used to do a fair amount of entertainment law. I managed some bands, fairly well-known ones, like Grant Hart from Husker Du, and I've done some legal work for some pretty well-known alternative music artists like Robin Hitchcock and Yo La Tengo and groups like that.
Okay.
But I, after our little visit, the former owner just looked at me and said, well, maybe you'd like to buy this place. And I said, maybe I would. And about 3 months later, we worked out a deal, and now it's mine. And I'm quite happy for it.
I'll bet, yeah. This is an aside, but what's the deal with the place next to it? Is that part of the package, or does somebody else?
It's somebody else owns that, but okay. I did almost buy that shortly after I bought the ballroom, but I'm glad I didn't, because the people that own and operate it now are doing a bang-up job, a lot better job than I probably would have done at it from this distance. It's gone through a handful of different owners and operators. I've had the ballroom now for about a dozen years, and it's gone through quite a handful over that time. But that place was first built and owned and operated by the four brothers who built the ballroom. So they owned that restaurant first, and that was actually built as a speakeasy. It had a ground floor restaurant and a basement speakeasy.
Wow.
And the four brothers, they all played in local orchestras, and so they decided they'd build this ballroom. And then in 1933, when the ballroom opened, you know, later that year, Prohibition was repealed, and so they were off and running, I guess. But the place next door is now called the Speakeasy, and you know, they're doing a great
job. Oh, cool. Good deal. Our guest on Spectrum West, Doug Myron. He is a public defender, lives in Minneapolis, but as he said, grew up in Wisconsin, so there's a plus for him on our show anyway. Owner of the Silver Dome Ballroom, and if you've traveled Highway 10 near Neillsville, you've seen it, and the curiosity just got the best of me. Plus, they have a big show coming up on Saturday,
yep.
and we'll get to that in a minute. This morning, I decided to Google old Wisconsin ballrooms, and there's a wonderful folk lib site that lists them all, and it brought up a lot of the ones I grew up near. I was amazed at how many there really are or were in Wisconsin. Well, how do we keep the fascination going? You know, the Sunday afternoon polka party isn't going to draw a large crowd forever, so the kinds of things that you're doing there, is that the formula? Is that what you've determined?
Well, I don't know about any particular formula, Al, but I operate it as a special events hall, and so we do weddings and other private events. And
sure.
We've had birthday parties and company functions and auctions and religious events. And I think we even had a political caucus in there once. as far as, you know, entertainment type of things go, I think what we're going to try to do is do a handful of events each year that can be kind of destination events, you know, for people around.
Sure.
You know, a couple of springtime events, a couple of fall events. I'm a little reluctant to do too much during the summer because there's just so much going on.
Sure is.
Everywhere. It's kind of tough to compete. And, of course, we're in a fairly remote location, which both works for us and against us. It's not a heavily populated area, but the remote location is part of the charm of the place as
you
well.
Bet. Yeah, probably camping is a good idea there.
You can. You bet. And for these bigger events, I've invited our guests to feel free to park their campers or pitch a tent, and we do have quite a number of people that spend the
cool.
night.
Well, you do hearken back a few years just through the name of the event Saturday, which is a Hootenanny. So tell us about the 2012 Spring Hootenanny, which is tomorrow.
Sure, Al. It's, well, we're calling it a Hootenanny, although technically a Hootenanny event is a mostly folk music event. We do have some folk music in the mix, but we've got a little something for everybody on this particular bill. We've got five bands for only a $15 cover charge. We're going to start with an acoustic duo known as the Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank. We've got a band from originally from the Prescott area called Communist Daughter that are making quite a name for themselves in the Twin Cities area, and they describe their music as epic folk rock. And as the evening progresses, we're going to get a little more into alternative rock and country rock with a couple of pretty well-known musicians. Grant Hart from the famous Minneapolis band Husker Du.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the Waco Brothers from Chicago, who are quite well-known in the alternative country field. They're fronted by an Englishman named John Langford, who's pretty well-known for a band he formed back in the 70s, who still, you know, perform and record today, called the Mekons. And so I think a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with them. Also on the bill is a real up-and-coming band from the Twin Cities called Four on the Floor. I just saw them last Friday. They sold out the main room at First Avenue, and they've only got one record out, but they're already touring the country, and I think they're going to be pretty big, actually. So it should be a great show.
And yeah.
We're gonna serve food and drinks, open the doors at 5, start the music about 6, and probably wrap up about midnight.
Everybody who does the kinds of things you're doing and preserving these structures deserves some congratulations. So thanks for doing it, and thanks for keeping your Wisconsin roots alive.
All right. Thank you, Al.
Doug Myron, owner, Silver Dome Ballroom, Highway 10 West in Neillsville. Doors open tomorrow at 5. Five different bands in the 2012 Spring Hootenanny. That's a word you don't use much anymore. Tickets at the door. Bring your camper, because they'll find room, it says here. Spectrum West is the name of this program. We appreciate you joining us on the 20th of April. I'm Al Ross. Let's dive right back in. For a fifth year, UW-Barron County is hosting a poetry slam, one that draws young people from all over northwest Wisconsin, and the guy at the wheel is English professor Joel Friedrich. Well, congratulations on the 5 years of the poetry slam. It's a sign that something's going right, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Our fifth year. I had to actually count them up a few times to make sure that's how long we've been going at it. But it keeps adding and growing and changing each year. We get different high schools interested.
Mm-hmm. I see that there are over 100 high school students expected from around the northwest part of Wisconsin. Any new wrinkles for number five?
Well, I'm going to bring back, or we're going to bring back some of the winners from previous years to have them do some of their winning poetry slams and show us how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a new school this year from Chippewa Falls, McDonnell,
right?
I need to say that again. We've got a new school this year coming from Chippewa Falls, McDonnell High, so we're really excited about that.
Cool. Yeah. You know, the whole slam phenomenon for me, I think we got into it last year. Not got into it, but we talked about it. this whole slam phenomenon, has it served to bring poetry into the lives of some young people who may not have grasped poetry without it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think because it's very high energy, you know, and it kind of bleeds across genre. It's not completely, it's literary poetry the same way that, you know, Robert Frost might be writing it, but it's also hip-hop rap, you know, and it's also got elements of comedy shticks, and
mm-hmm.
it's got performative aspects. A lot of it is message, too, and I think, you know, young people who are learning poetry in schools, they look for high-energy messages in poems, and a lot of times the poems, the literary poems, are more literary, language-based, imagery,
mm-hmm.
and they don't emphasize so much the, you know, raw anger or humor or angst about love or whatever that slam poetry can.
Well, you brought up the term high energy a couple times in that response. That leads me to ask, can any poem be slammed? I mean, is there such a thing as a quiet slam?
That's a great question, Al. You know, I don't think so. Last year, the MC, the student who was MCing it, I gave him one of my poems. Actually, I gave him my whole book, and he looked through it trying to find a poem that he could slam to demonstrate. And they just really didn't work. My own poems, you know, I could tell the audience losing interest. I think they work on the page, and I think they work when I read them out loud in a traditional literary reading. But to slam it, it's really hard to put that into it.
So intent really should be there when you set out to write something.
I think so. You know, I've been having that same student work on a series of sort of instructional video clips that we can post on YouTube or somewhere so that high schools who want to come can check those out. They keep asking for DVDs, and it's kind of hard to make DVDs that really work. So we were brainstorming what are the elements that make a good slam poem, and I just came up with things like repetition, sort of like a preacher would do call and response. You know, can I get an amen? And just repeating elements like Martin Luther King did in I Have a Dream, so they come back like a refrain. There's song-like elements. I think you need a lot of variety, parts that are quiet, parts that are loud, parts that are fast, parts that are slow. Those kind of things make a strong slam poem. So I think you do have to have the intent when you sit down to create it.
English professor at UW-Barron County, Joel Friedrich, is the guy we're speaking with at the moment. Joel, has this performance variety become part of the English curriculum in Northwest Wisconsin high schools?
Well, I think the schools that keep coming back do spend some time in their classes getting ready for it. I know that some of the teachers bring their entire, you know, say 10th grade English class, which could be 50 students or so, and I believe they spend some weeks ahead of time creating these poems, you know, trying them out, practicing them. Other high schools, it's more of an extracurricular thing that students get ready for on their own. So I think it can go either way. But, yeah, in the schools that have come back repeatedly, I think Northwestern in Maple, up far north, it seems like it takes them over for a while. And it all really does come back to a particular teacher and group of students that are really into it.
Yeah. When I was going to high school, if you were to walk up and down the halls and ask, there was a very small percentage of students who said English was their favorite class. You know, I have a feeling that maybe this is bringing English into a whole new light.
Well, it's fun, you know, and it allows a little yelling and screaming sometimes, which anybody's going to like. You know, you sit in a classroom for many hours, and it's all got to be quiet, and you can't really find direct methods to express yourself the way you did when you were a child. I think that's it. Poetry Slam kind of brings back a younger version of childhood. You know, when you're in your teens, getting ready to graduate, things getting pretty serious, it kind of allows you to step back in time a bit and relive some of those wilder, expressive times.
The fifth annual Poetry Slam, UW-Barron County, is a week from today. Give us the particulars, if you would, please, for those of us who might want to come and watch and listen.
It would be wonderful to get more and more audience members from communities who are stopping in to check it out. It's open to anybody. It's going to be held on the UW-Barron County campus in Rice Lake, and we'll be starting at 9:30 with an introduction, some opening comments, and some demonstration slams. And then the students who are performing and competing break up into groups and go off for round one in a few different places in the campus. We'll have a break about mid to late morning, about 11, 11:30. We'll go for semifinals, and then we'll have a break for lunch. And just after lunch, we'll have our final round, which will be in our commons. It's pretty obvious. It's a big area right by our parking lot here in Rice Lake. So we go from 9:30 until we finish up probably about 1:30 or 2 o'clock.
English professor Joel Friedrich, UW-Barron County, 5th Annual Poetry Slam next Friday. No charge. I would take it in if I were you.
Wisconsin Public Radio can be heard almost anywhere in the state. To find the programming schedule for your area, visit WPR.org and click on Studios, Stations, and Program Schedules. It's all online at WPR.org.
Thank you, sir. This is Spectrum West. The time is 5:49. It's 11 minutes before 6. I'm Al Ross. We appreciate you being here like you wouldn't believe. Myself, all the other people. Grace Fair, thanks to her for promotional support. And, of course, there's Jim Oliver.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The University of Wisconsin Stout Theater Department will perform the musical Cabaret tonight and Saturday at the Harvey Hall Theater on the University campus in Menominee. Richard III, a production of the theater department of the University of Wisconsin River Falls, plays tonight and Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday at the Blanche Davis Theater of the Klein Bell Fine Arts Building on the University campus in River Falls. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Dora the Explorer will play tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will perform Gypsy next Thursday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Fox on the Fairway will play tonight and Saturday and selected weekdays and Sundays at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater. The show will run through July 1st. Ole's Dead, Lena's Dating will play tonight and Saturday at the Space Center for Creativity in New Richmond. The Family and Youth Theater at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls will perform Alice in Wonderland tonight and Sunday. The show runs through April 29th. And Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers, plays tonight and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The musical runs through May 12th. And that's some of what's happening in theaters around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you very much, sir. Some loose ends. 47th Annual Spring Art Show is up at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, and Connect Disconnect, featuring drawings by Danica Odines, is on display at the Ellie Phillips Library in Eau Claire, running through May 29th. Well, he's lived in Canada, the Netherlands, Spain, and now Eau Claire. He's an accomplished cellist and a popular teacher and mentor. Dr. Tulio Rondon has a solo in Sunday's concert of the University Symphony Orchestra at UW Eau Claire. Let's talk about where he's been and going. What attracted you to Eau Claire? How did you end up in Eau Claire, and specifically the university?
Well, I moved from Spain, actually, and even though here it's very cold, I have to admit.
Yes, it is. Not this winter.
Not this winter, it's true. I was looking for a job, and I was invited to two different universities, and this university had a real fantastic feeling in the faculty. That's mainly what attracted me at the beginning. And then it's really beautiful. I like it here very much.
How about you personally and professionally as a performer? What do you do? Do you travel around and perform? Or are you
I do travel sometimes, quite a bit, actually. I just came from the Netherlands and Belgium from performing with... I have a Sephardic music group, and we perform with early music instruments.
Ah.
And we all met in The Hague and in the conservatory. So I perform regularly in Minneapolis with various Baroque groups, and specifically Lyra Baroque Orchestra. And I travel to places to play recitals and master classes.
Are you a composer as well?
No, I don't compose.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
My wife always asks me that. She thinks, people think that if you play any instrument, you can compose anything, but it's not really that easy.
No?
No. I can attempt, but it's not going to be probably a great composition. I can make you a song. Not now.
No.
But
is that something that you feel like you may do eventually in your life, or is it just not interest you?
At one point it did interest me, but I don't think I will be doing that since I'm playing a lot of instruments. I play gamba, baroque cello, and modern cello, and I feel that's way too much already.
How much does a guy like you practice?
All day, as much as you can, whenever you have free time.
Uh-huh.
You cannot leave your instruments at home for Christmas or the summer.
Mm.
That's never going to happen.
No. I love
that. That's what I actually tell my students. Like, the first day, you're getting into this, so just letting you know that until you cannot play the instrument anymore, you have to practice your skills and your everything. Mm-hmm. That's the way it is.
And you won't go anywhere unless you do.
I won't.
You won't get any better unless you do.
Exactly, yeah.
What is it like in college for a musician? I remember when I was in high school, I had to go home and I had a practice card, and I had to have my parents sign the fact that I practiced for an hour, and then I'd bring it back and I'd show it to the guy.
They're definitely on their own, but then we have, we have expectations and things that they have to follow, and it's easy to measure when they don't practice.
Mm-hmm.
They know too. It's usually quite obvious.
We all, I think, have an idea of what the climate is like in Argentina, but...
In Venezuela.
I'm Venezuela, I'm sorry. Yes. South America, I got that right. Didn't I?
Yes.
Okay, let me repose that question. We all sort of know what the the weather climate is like in Venezuela. Is there kind of a rivalry there between the
no,
two?
No, and this is a funny thing. Everybody always says I'm from Argentina or Brazil. I guess it's the most appealing countries. A lot of people confuse when they ask me, where are you from? And I said, Venezuela. And they always say, oh, Minnesota. My uncle is from there. I don't know where that come from.
Oh, my gosh. So the musical climate in Venezuela, is music big there? I mean, obviously there are certain kinds of music that are associated with certain countries, but you play classical music.
Classical music is one of the most amazing things happening in Venezuela, and it's actually very famous in the world or worldwide because it's called El Sistema or The System.
Mm.
And we have amazing musicians coming out from there. And the idea or the reason it is famous is because no matter where you go, the smallest town that you have in Venezuela will have an orchestra.
Hmm.
And all the kids will have access to free instruments until they decide not to study anymore music. So it's a very fantastic program. They have tried to copy it all around the world. And also there are some programs in, I think, New England Conservatory or in the States, there are some programs that you actually apply for scholarships to move to Venezuela for a couple of years and learn all this system and then come back. And one of the most important musicians that came out of there is Gustavo Dudamel, which is now the leading conductor, the musical director of L.A. Symphony. She's a very young conductor, very one of those prodigy people.
So having that kind of pride in your home country and its ability to produce such wonderful musicians, How does the United States and how does the Midwest compare musically? Because it seems to be somewhat of a hotbed. You can find pretty good music in these areas.
Yeah, but the difference between Venezuela is the youth program is what the difference is. And then you'll have professional orchestras in some of the biggest cities, but then the real fantastic orchestras are all in Caracas.
What does that mean to young people? Do a lot of young people in Venezuela then continue their music into adulthood?
Yeah. This is what I was talking with somebody. It actually makes classical music be as cool as anything that you can have because...
It's respected in
Venezuela. It's very respected. And not only you have a presence everywhere, but they also have this youth orchestra that is the one that is most famous around the world from this program. And it's a bunch of kids from all over the country. They do auditions in order to be in this orchestra. And they travel all around the world and perform with the leading conductors and soloists of the world. So it becomes like a really cool thing to do.
Was that always the case? I mean, we know.
No. This started in 1975. The idea was the same, but it wasn't as huge and as famous as is now, because now it grew mm-hmm. very much and it's a very powerful system.
So was that early education something you were involved in?
Yes. Most of Venezuelan students, music students, there are some private schools, of course, but everybody has some kind of relationship with El Sistema in some ways or another, either the professors or the orchestras And I was part of the El Sistema.
What's in Tulio's future? Do you want to remain an educator? Do you want
Sure. I love teaching and I love this place. So far, the future will be Eau Claire.
All righty. Sunday's program features the University Symphony under the direction of Nobuyoshi Yasuda, as some people pronounce it. And in addition to Dr. Rondon's solo, it also features an original composition by another Blue Gold Music teaching icon, Dr. Ethan Wickman. Tickets online. Yes, on sale online. And at the Service Center, call 836-3727. It all begins at 2 p.m. in Concert Hall. Okay? Let's see, what else? UW-Eau Claire University Band presents its spring concert, 7:30 Tuesday evening, Gantner Concert Hall again. See, I'm starting to trip, so I better leave. Non-stop stuff today, but that makes the hour fly by, doesn't it? Next week, the Big River Radio Wave rolls into Alma again. The Fanny Hill Dinner Theater current production, Bubble Mania, comes to Chippewa Falls, and a lot more. Have a nice weekend, everybody. I'm Al Ross. I'll see you next Friday.